what would be best described as a neutral area, midway between Earth and the Moon. In the package, there will be a communication device. And following that activation, now I've asked to say here. Oh yeah, as they say, in the package there will be a communication device, and following this there will be ambassadorship in quotes. Realize that the ambassador will be so right, you know, so knowing the time, that he will speak the languages of the individuals, humans who speak to him. The ambassador must be right. He will know the languages, the nuances, the slang, all of this. The device in the package is there. The device in the package is there as a method of communication. It will be a package that simply says, quote, press here to talk. That simple. There's not what could be termed a federation of planets. There is, however, an international reverence that reveres nations. Life in many places is expensive. In other places, it is cheap. Nations, those that can reach the ability to have a stable nationhood, know they must create a system where their own systems would aid in their perpetuation, not in their dissolution. And they revere that in others. If they were to say if the Boodians were to say that you must gaze at yellow for 10 minutes every day upon penalty of death, you would do this if the threat were high enough. But what would be the gain or the benefit? Subjugation? You would continually seek methods to, one, not look at yellow for 10 minutes, two, plot methods to overthrow those who chain you to look at the yellow. Thus, you would pull the civilization down. Therefore, a civilization that is able to perpetuate itself does not have such anomalies within it. This is revered. Or that is revered. If you can cause that which will perpetuate itself so that there is growth for all, loss for none, then you have a system that works. In the universe, let us assure you, the one philosophy that extends over more than any other is, quote, does it work?
Yeah.
Contact with Boodies is an important one and will lead to further contacts, many, many indeed. So that's the basic stuff, and it's a very good booklet.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And now what happened is in the 90s, I quizzed them a lot more, and they would not tell me a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What they did tell me, they had not told anybody, and that was in 1989 about a contact that happened in Russia that Pravda reported. You remember that one?
No.
Pravda reported in October 89 that there was contact or some vehicle came, and they seriously, being the New York Times of Russia, announced this.
Mm-hmm.
And they stuck to their guns, and then the wall went down a month later, and the contact had nothing to do with the wall. But the wall went down, and in American press in 1991, while Pravda kept saying, we do have this contact, we saw the vehicle, and we know there's a life out there, the New York Times and American journalists said, oh, that's just due to Glasnost and them learning how to express freedom of speech and all. They kept putting it down.
Mm-hmm.
But it was told to Gorbachev, and the Evergreens told me this, and Gorbachev told, he was given, you know, by the person who reported the incident to Gorbachev, proved to Gorbachev it happened. I don't know what evidence they had.
Mm-hmm.
Gorbachev realized it happened. So the Emery said, Gorbachev said, well, if this is true, and it seems to be, then what we do is pretty childish.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Gorbachev's reaction. They then told about six countries' military intelligence, probably the NATO countries. So those countries knew it. They then decided that we don't know what the military elite that knew this said. Well, we don't know what they're going to do to us, so we've got to start to spread a meme that we will protect humans and we must be fearful of them. We will protect humans from these UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
As humans in the 90s began to more and more realize that something's going on. So that's why the meme went out through Bill Cooper,
mm-hmm.
why Bill O'Reilly did sightings, that show. Then mm-hmm. the X-Files, all that stuff was put out by the elite, what I would call solar government guys,
mm-hmm.
to make us paranoid. Now, you followed that paranoia in the early 90s, and you
mm-hmm.
told me before.
Mm-hmm.
You noticed these military guys started coming in,
mm-hmm.
taking over the UFO field.
Mm-hmm.
But by the end of the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and the Air Marines predicted this, many people realize that was the game the military is playing and do not fall into that trap of fearing the extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So that whole process that you report to me as you went through the 90s, the Evergreens predicted in 89 to me,
mm-hmm.
is that what would happen. And it unfolded in the early 90s. They created all this paranoia about UFOs and
yeah.
all that stuff. But it ran its course by 2000.
Well, I think they're trying to do it again, aren't they, right now?
Yeah, and then now you have the whole, you know, September 11th and that attempt to create fear. It's a last gasp.
Yeah.
And they've got 20 years to play with it.
Yeah.
And they'll do it, but...
And it's in, and it's all written down in the report from Iron Mountain, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Their plans.
That's the only meme they have.
Yeah. And now, what do you mean by meme? Okay, what are you meaning when you use meme the way you just used it?
Meme is a cultural idea, a cultural habit. It's a thought form. Like, we have genes, but Christianity is a meme. Religion is a meme. Different cultures have different variations on it.
Maybe I'm not correct in my... I looked it up, and I found it goes to artificial intelligence. It's used in the guys that are trying to make thinking machines.
Right. Richard Dawkins, in the book, The Selfish Gene, in 76, coined the word meme.
Meme, and it meant the smallest unit of language that could affect human behavior.
Well, that's good enough. It's a mental thing, right?
Okay.
It's the mental part. It's the medium of software.
But, I mean, he's talking about affecting behavior. So that's like action.
Who is?
Whoever.
The definition you just said?
The definition, is like one that says the smallest unit of language.
That affects behavior.
That affects, you know, can cause human behavior and change behavior.
Right. Now, don't we think language with, we associate language with the mind?
Yeah, we do.
Right?
That's right.
So the thinking part that controls us,
mm-hmm.
which is McLuhan's point, every new medium, which is always just linguistic, extensions of language, mold us. That is a different form of controlling humans than the gene.
Yeah.
So it's let's call it the software or mental form of controlling.
So, you know, it's like the mental gene, in other words.
Yes, the mental gene.
It's the meme,
Yeah, it's a mental gene.
It's a great word. It's a great word.
Yeah, and your definition is exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The smallest unit of mental thinking by humans that affects and creates a kind of shared behavior.
Yeah, some kind of behavior, some kind of action.
A belief system.
Yeah, could be.
Right.
Well, a belief system would be, a meme would have to be a tiny, small thing, like, how do you spell relief, you know?
Yes, you mean the word relief?
No, it's a meme. The meme is an advertising. It's R-O-L-A-I-D-S.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, how do you spell relief? Rolaids, you know?
Right.
And that's a meme. That's a real meme because it makes you go out and buy Rolaids when you need relief.
Right. Now, but a belief is...
But a belief can be complicated in a religion, man. That's, shit. That's a huge thing, and...
But isn't that imparted through language?
It is, but it's a conspiracy of people from all walks of life, you know. And
well, that's a meme. That's a
cultural
habit.
The meme would be the smallest unit of language that would check. It can be the meme.
But then it goes on TV and millions of people.
Yeah, but it would have to be meme compounding on memes, compounding on memes, like the structure of the human body forming molecules and, you know, from atoms to, to...
And that's fitting its wake.
That's
what Joyce did. He took little units and built all and showed the layering of culture.
Right.
So yes, the multiplication of memes.
Yeah. So, but the meme itself, the pure definition would be the smallest unit of language that would affect behavior.
Right. Now, what did I say that got us on that? Because
I don't know. It's I ask you to define meme.
Oh yeah. So I was. What was I saying about the memes though?
You used it three or four times.
Yeah, now what was I talking about?
Well, you
were using the word. We were talking about
the meme.
I guess I meant the UFO meme.
The UFO meme or the Bootes meme.
Well, no, the intelligence agencies created the meme.
Yeah.
Of let's be afraid the UFO.
Yeah, right.
They manufactured that from 89 on.
Just say no to UFO.
Yeah. So now we got on to that because I was just describing some of the things that the Evergreens assisted. Oh yeah, so I was leading up. Now what happened in the early 90s is that they would not tell me.
Mm-hmm.
They said we will not discuss this anymore, mm-hmm. and I said, I don't know if I said this or thought it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember right now,
mm-hmm.
but I got confirmation somehow mm-hmm. through another session. I said, this is so important to humans
mm-hmm.
that you don't want anybody to know what's going on so that the human can share in the discovery of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said yes. And it actually, this gets real complicated because I jump from topic to topic and reading to reading.
Yeah.
But I asked them if, what's his name, the unicorn murdered Holly.
Yeah.
What's his name? Ira?
Ira Einhorn.
Yeah. And I asked him back in 2000 or so,
mm-hmm.
and 2001, and they said, we cannot tell you whether he murdered her or not until after the trial.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why? And they said, because it will affect the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you mean if one human knows mm-hmm. What he really did, that distorts the process of discovery that the trial has to work out, like you could say human karma or something.
Yeah.
And they said yes. And I said, so we're that sensitive to each other?
Mm-hmm.
And they said yes. All 6 billion people on the planet
Absolutely.
Are intimately connected to each other and influence each other.
Well, that's not been proven in physics.
Beg your pardon?
That's now been called entanglement in physics.
Yes. The new word is quanglement.
Quanglement? Yeah, oh, great. Oh, that's
yeah,
good.
You know Roger Penrose? You've heard of him?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, he has a new book out. It's like 1,200 pages.
Quanglement?
And I was looking through it at the bookstore last night.
Jesus.
It's a huge volume. It's him laying out the whole history of physics and everything.
Great.
And he coins a new word, quanglement. It's like quantum entanglement.
That's great.
And he doesn't like, he says quantum entanglement does not communicate the meaning of what he's trying to project. Yeah. So quanglement, I think, was the word he came up with.
Quanglement. That's the name of the book then, huh?
No, the book is called The Road to Reality.
The Road to Reality, Penrose.
Yeah, you look it up in a bookstore. It's just came out, and it's like 1,100 pages long. Incredible fucking volume.
He's worked with Hameroff.
What?
He works with Stuart Hameroff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right. So anyway, what was I talking? So you brought up in terms of the quantum connection.
How much does the book sell for?
I forgot to look at the price. I was
$100, man.
Probably.
Yeah.
But here's, you know, it's Oxford University Press.
Oh, yeah, fancy, yeah.
So the thing is that, so they said, they're explaining that you cannot know Bob till after the trial,
yeah,
we will tell you whether he did or not.
So the trial happened. Yeah.
He was found guilty.
Yeah.
So last, I think it was a year ago, I had a session with the Evergreens.
Yeah.
I said, okay, trial's up. What happened?
Yeah.
Did he really do it? They said, yes.
Uh-huh.
He murdered Holly. And I said, why did it happen? And, if I remember now, and I hate to pricey when I don't have it exactly, because they're always very precise and what they're saying, but in my memory, I haven't listened to the reading in many months, is that they fought a lot. There were a lot of, you know, relationship stresses.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just went off, you know, deep end and killed her.
Uh-huh.
And so there it is. And now Jack, in his book, Sarfati, wrestles with this, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I've read both of Jack's books. He's worked on a third one. Very interesting, his story in relation to Ira, because he was involved with him,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the 70s. And to know, I'm assuming the Evergreens are telling the truth,
mm-hmm.
to know it, you can see through it, but then you can understand why things happened
mm-hmm.
and why Ira was a bit nutty all through the 80s and 90s. You know, he just motor mouth, right? Neurotic about, you know, suppressing. He denies, like O.J. Simpson, he denied that he did it to his mind.
Well, I mean, isn't that the same thing as dissociative identity disorder?
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of brought that up to him in the email when he was over in France.
Right.
You
interacted with him through Jack. You got his email, right?
No, he got mine somehow. They even called me, you know, just before the trial. They wanted me to testify.
When they were here or in France?
In France. They wanted me to come to France to testify. I was sick as a dog at the time. I didn't even take.
Yeah, but not. You didn't get testify over. You mean to help to keep the French government keeping him quarantined?
That's right. To keep him from coming over here.
And that would have been in 99, 2000.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. Maybe it was. No, it was later. It was just before I dropped. You know, I got really sick. Whenever that was, it was like 2003, I think.
Well, look.
So that was after.
By 2002.
He was already here, and he was going on trial in Pennsylvania.
So they want you to go to the trial.
Yeah, they wanted me to come and testify at the trial. And
they might have started making overtures when they were still in France?
Yeah, yeah. And I just ignored the whole fucking thing because because I, you know, I mean, you
did you intuit that he had killed her?
I intuited he killed her, and that he suffers from multiple personality disorder.
Right. So here's the important part for us. So then I said, okay, he's killed. Now I said, what about all his claims that he was involved in high intelligence activities and this and that, and the Tom Bearden world and all that stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
They said that is in a way it's true. They said after the trial, they may have told me before he died.
Yeah.
I mean, before the trial came out in the first question, when they wouldn't tell me whether he's guilty or not, but they did tell me this.
Yeah.
They said much will come out of the trial, and go and read the transcripts once the trial's over. You will find so much information about what was going on that comes out during the trial about the intrigue that Ira was involved in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the war that the war between the Russians and the CIA that Jack Sefardi said he was part of, that the British guy told him, you know, you will be involved in this psychic warfare.
Yeah, yeah.
Or this try to figure out how to get a psychic dimension remote viewing in the Cold War.
Yeah.
They said, go and read the transcripts, and you will find a lot of interesting information came out in the trial that will not be talked about in the press, in the coverage of the trial.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever get a chance, read the transcripts.
Right, I will. I'd like to do that.
Because that would go into the period you were involved in.
That's right.
You know? And
well, he knew everybody. Ira knew everybody. He was
right. That's right.
He was right at the top of the whole shebang.
The whole Aquarian conspiracy.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, like Jack, I think, has a handler today. He doesn't know it, but...
Oh, let me tell you what they ever say about Jack's work.
What?
I mean, I first of all, you know, I check all this stuff out.
Sure.
First question about Jack is, who the fuck phoned him when he was 13, right?
Yeah, that's
the phone call.
That's a good one. Yeah. Who?
Yeah.
Was,
wait, did a computer phone him? Did a UFO? I'm asking the every.
Yeah.
No, it was a. They said, if I remember, get it right. There was much concern in 52, 53, in the Cold War, about developing new technology.
Right.
So they needed to get the smart students.
Yeah.
And it's true, they were selecting the smart students and seeing what how to train them, how to activate their imagination, their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an experiment. And Jack has said that this is, what I'm about to say, is a possibility, and the possibility of what was going on. He understands that that could have been what was going on.
Yeah.
Even though he says, well, maybe it was some UFO, a weird thing. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But the Evergreen said, yes, it was people monitoring him as a bright student, and they did it to all kinds of students. They did a kind of practical joke on their mind so that they could – the experiment was, let's see if we put the idea of UFOs in these kids' minds, maybe they'll think more interesting things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we'll program them to think of the possibility and see what comes out of it.
And then maybe they can solve the problem for us.
Right. And so I then decided it was what's his name, Breen?
Yeah, Walter Breen.
Walter Breen. I sort of described Breen.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it sounds like Breen was the guy. And they said, yes. Now, we don't need to go to Breen. We've talked about before. So that's
Have we talked about Breen's involvement in the Golden Dawn and all that shit?
You've told me a lot about Breen, but I don't know. You told me about this pederasty thing he got into.
No, but he was involved in black magic and the Golden Dawn and Crowley stuff.
Like the Jack Parsons world.
Yeah, that one. But he was on the East Coast, and he was later. So Pat Parsons and all the Hubbard and those guys were long gone. But he was married to Marion Zimmer Bradley.
Yeah, they did the Avalon, Mist of Avalon.
You know, and he came by. He wrote reviews for the Evo, but he...
He got into Crowley in the 60s or something.
Well, I mean, when I was, you know, on my 40-day astrip, there the fucking guy is, and I see that this guy knows what I'm talking about, you know?
Well, who are you talking about, Walter?
Walter Breen.
Oh, you interacted with him during the 60, the 90 days, whatever?
Yeah, my 40-day astrip trip, yeah.
Why, because he was around the paper?
He was, a regular contributor. He did reviews, you know?
And you said he seemed to know.
And he knew. I mean, I babbled this shit, and all the other people wanted to lock me up and put me in a straitjacket. And he'd identify. He says, well, that's initiation to this and that and this and that. And he knew all of this.
He'd translate you.
Yeah, huh?
He'd translate you.
Yeah. And then, you know, after I saw him the last time I saw him in my life, I took a cab uptown.
Well, that was in the 60s?
At the end of the 60s.
Yeah.
68. When I already met. I was going up to meet Peggy at her 829 Park Avenue, and we're going in the cab, and the cab is hit sideways with this big noise and bang and all that shit, but the cab just like went through it like fog, but it was a big wreck, you know, that we just come through.
It didn't stop.
Well, I don't know what happened, but it was the noise and the clanging, the smashing, the knocking me back and forth in the cab, and the cab moved on. And we got to A-29, the cab looked unscathed. It was a weird phenomenon.
Right.
Get there, get up to the thing, Peggy's penthouse apartment. A few minutes later, Timothy and Rosemary come up. And they had the same experience of the cab hitting something and then nothing was hurt. And they couldn't figure out how they'd had a car, you know, car wreck and nobody was hurt and all that shit. So that was tied directly. I don't know how it was tied to Walter Breen, but it was something about like he predicted it.
You remember him verbally saying it?
Yeah, something about it, you know, like.
So you left him at some interesting conversation and then that happened.
Right. Yeah,
so there's something odd about him.
That's tied. Yeah, he was in, and then he dies in prison. But the thing is, he died in prison the same way that Joel Fabricant, who's the guy
I remember that he published EVO, right?
He was forced upon the paper by Alan Katzman and Peter Leggeri, who were greedy for money. So they brought in Marty Tepper and Joel Fabricant. And Fabricant, I took an acid trip with him. That's when I knew for sure that observation, if you give a frog LSD, you got a frog on LSD.
Right.
Because this guy couldn't get any higher than he was greedy, and he was fucking Jewish, and he was like all that lower chakra shit, you know.
And so he died in jail?
He died in jail of something. I don't know what he died of, but I'll bet it was, you know, somebody, they found out he was a child molester or something. Both of them.
Was he in there with Walter?
No, they were. I don't know if he was or not. They may have been in the same jail. I don't know where.
But you don't know why were they in jail? What did they do?
I don't know. I think Walter was in jail for pedophilia, and I wouldn't be surprised if that might have got Joel killed too. But he might have been there for like money laundering, you know, because they were definitely. The Mellon Bank came and looked at the books after I was out with Peggy a few months. Then I came back to make a decision about what to do with it. These guys wanted to stop and start their own newspaper. I had my choice to get rid of them all and get Eric McLuhan in there to run it, you know.
Right.
And probably we could have scraped enough. There's probably a lot of money in that newspaper that I didn't even know about because everybody was stealing hand over fist. You know?
Yeah.
So I got to shut that down and redone that. And the next time I go through that reality, if I'm born again and go through that one, I'll do it a different way.
Right, but you're saying, so Peggy and them decided, what's that they're...
They said, they looked at it, they said, God, they're running money in cigar boxes. This is a money laundry for drugs and stuff, and you better get your ass out of here, get free and clear. That's why I sold out so easy. And get free and clear and don't even look back.
Because
somebody's going to jail. And the person that went to jail was Joel Fabricant.
Years later, though.
It wasn't too many years later.
But not for the EVO, but the karma was there.
It was for EVO, I think.
You're kidding. I never heard of that. No one ever.
No, I think they kept it real quiet, but I think he got busted. You know, and they had a mafia money laundering going on there.
Right. Hey, that was going on behind your scenes as Alan took over the operation.
Yeah, and Alan Katzman was corrupt, and Peter Leggeri was multi-super corrupt. He was.
How do you spell Leggeri?
Leggeri. And he was neither one of them had much talent, you know. They weren't real creative, visionary types, and they were just like these negative guys. And
you mean Alan and Peter?
Peter, yeah. Peter had been trained as a lawyer.
Right, but you're saying the unimaginative guys are Alan and Peter.
Yeah, Alan was foisted on me by Ishmael Reed. Said, you need a sergeant. This guy will be there all the time.
Right.
Do all the shit you don't want to do, you know. And he's the kind of plotter, you know. He's a
we were talking about. So Jack Sarfatti. Now, first of all, there's the thing about the computer voice.
Yeah.
Now, the next thing is, what do you, the Evergreens, is there any value in the physics he does? And they said that someone will come after Jack, studying Jack's physics, who will make the big breakthrough.
Yeah, because that the superluminal concept is kind of a moot point at this stage of the development of physics, because they've slowed light down to 15 miles an hour. Why 15 miles an hour? Because that's the speed you got to go through the crossing guard, you know, for children, school crossings.
Right, right.
You know, they just did it arbitrarily because they can speed up the speed of lightning and slow it down. So the speed of light is not a constant like Einstein thought it was. Photon.
And that's called superluminous.
Well, the superluminal means above the speed of light.
Yes, above the speed of light.
But the point is that light has no constant speed. So it's like, you know, above, below, or anything else, you know, so what?
So they're just beginning to see that.
Well, they've done it in the labs, and they've already done it. It's a couple years old now.
Right, so Jack...
And that's when Jack changed his superluminal theory, you know, after that.
He changed it to what?
I don't know
to
what
he has now?
I don't know what he's got now. I haven't checked in, but...
Right, so the superluminal is what he used in the 90s.
Yeah, that was the one he was hanging his hat on.
Yeah, in the late 90s. He did change in his book. He mm-hmm. did change in 2002.
Yeah, so that's about when it came out, yeah.
And so that he had to go beyond that because it had already been done in the lab.
Yeah. And the guy that's got the lead as far as communicating with people, I mean, well, Penrose is great. Stuart Hameroff is fucking terrific, and his collaborations with Penrose are great. Wolf is a great writer.
Wolf?
Yeah, you know, what's his name, Wolf? You know, the physicist, Wolf. He's a friend of Jack's, and he's a good writer. He writes really good books explaining.
Wolf. You don't mean
Fred Allen Wolf.
Oh, yeah, Fred Wolf. I know what you mean. Yeah.
And he's a good writer, but
I just listened to an interview he did with Gary Null.
Yeah, I don't think he has done any great, like, eurekas like some of these, like Penrose has, and like Hameroff has done some fantastic shit. I mean, Hameroff.
Fred always popularizes into Buddhism and
yeah, but
and
that's
yoga.
Good. That's valuable. But the thing that Hameroff does, he's a fucking anesthesiologist, and he's interested in consciousness from a very practical point of view. And he wants to know, you know, is it on or is it off? And what is on and what is off? And how far off is off and how far on is on, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a great thing to approach this thing, because you cannot call that thing that Jung and Freud did. You cannot use the term unconscious unless you're talking about somebody that has been given gas and isn't going to remember, you know?
Right.
And their mind's been erased and it's controlled by chemicals. And there's nothing being recorded there. That is unconscious. And nothing will ever be retrieved. You'll never find an out-of-the-body experience. You'll never find an NDE in there or anything else. No dreams, nothing. It's off. That's unconscious. So why use that word? Why not use the word subconscious?
Right.
You know,
I noticed the Evereens use that, the word subconscious.
Yeah, they're smart.
So I wanted to mention that. So they said that Jack is, you know, making new... headway, but someone following his work will be the one that'll make whatever his work, whatever Jack's work is leading to.
Right.
And then the other thing is people in the field, the advanced secret labs, are tracking Jack's work.
Uh-huh.
They take it seriously and they monitor it and see where it leads. So in that sense, he's got a handler.
Yeah, he does have a handler, and it's that beautiful... British girl,
the one that he's his girlfriend with the wife. I mean, with the kid.
Has she got a kid? I don't know, but I just saw her. She's gorgeous and fucking.
Where'd you see her?
Well, I was having lunch with him at the Cafe Trieste, and
you're talking about years ago.
Yeah, yeah. She drove up, and he runs out and jumps in, and boom.
I don't know if you think. Why do you think that woman is still? That's
because what would an ugly fucker like Jack? What would a gorgeous woman like that be attracted to little Jack? He's not rich. He's not even on top.
So what do you think? I don't think Jack needs a handler.
Well, you need somebody to monitor him, you know, to keep...
No, they just monitor his emails.
Well, they need more than that, you know. No, this lady...
I don't think he's any threat in any way. He's only a threat in terms of what he discovers or thinks.
No, I think it was back in those days, you know, whenever this happened, it fit. It was appropriate.
Yeah, I can understand your point that he's... Yeah. I don't see why he would be a problem they had to handle.
Well, I don't either, but you don't know... I mean, you and I don't know physics either, you know.
Right.
I don't know why they got so fucking bent out of shape with Operation Mind Control. There's still something in there that I don't understand, you know?
Right.
So...
but the thing is that Jack, he publishes what he does, so there's no secret.
But does he publish it in the proper venue?
Well, it's right on. He sends out an email.
That don't count. That's bullshit. That doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, no, but you can read it.
Yeah, but that doesn't.
And he's now published it in his books.
Yeah, well,
I mean, why?
Is he published in peer review?
Yes. As a matter of fact, he did a lecture tour the past year.
Okay.
He's actually getting knowledgeable a bit. He went around to the respectable institutes in Europe and spoke.
Good.
Yeah.
He needs to do that. He needs to kowtow a little to the establishment.
Yes, right. And so I think he's doing something good, or he's on the right track.
Yeah.
And
I hope so.
He will always be the outsider. He won't get the big kudos that he wants, but his work is important.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I track it and try to understand it.
Yeah, good. Well, you collect relics anyway and fragments. And, you know,
yeah.
It's like you're the guy, if anybody's going to make sense of the 235 quote scrap genes in the human genome, you're going to be it.
Yep.
You'll be the
guy. Let me read you what Gail Whitaker said.
Okay.
She's on Jack's list.
Yeah.
Well, she wrote out of the blue.
Yeah.
She said, where would it be? Let's see if I can find it quickly.
What's her email address? You got it?
Yeah, I can give it to you. Just get the sequence she did here.
This is Gail you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see why it started. I guess she asked a question. So she goes, two Bob Dobbs, two Bob Deans, three Stephen Schwartzes, and a partridge in a pear tree. I give up. End this misery now. So I wrote to her and Jack and Saul Paul, these guys on the list. I said, I'm not Bob Dean, in quotes. That misplaced concreteness comes from my 38-year association with Dr. Carol Dean. She has a higher media profile than me. Mm-hmm. I recall years ago, you, Gail, indicated to Jack a residence in Toronto. So you might remember Carol in the late 80s and early 90s on Toronto TV.
Mm-hmm.
Say the Deanie Petty Show, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I was assuming she was in Toronto. Mm-hmm. I accept the confusion. It allows me to infiltrate the secret worlds of contemporary wizards. So I accept the people confusing me with Bob Dean. So that's what I said to her. So she writes back... since for some reason I thought she was somebody who'd written on Jack's list, many, 2 or 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed like a person from Toronto. She says, hello, Bob. I spoke with you a long time ago when you were in New York holding Peggy Hitchcock's mother's hand in her waning days.
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't know anything about that. I never spoke to her.
Mm-hmm.
Carolyn was treating Peggy's mother.
Yeah.
So... maybe Peggy told this to
Gail. Yeah.
She says, I still lived in Tucson then. That implies she doesn't live there anymore.
No.
I think your wife was doing something with Andy Weil, it would be, at University of Arizona at the time. Well, Carolyn's wife, Carolyn was in touch with Margot, who was with Andy.
Was,
She says, I remember that I told you a bit about the Bible Code.
Really?
In Oak Island.
Mm-hmm.
Oak Island off Nova Scotia, right?
Yeah.
Is that in the Bible Code?
I don't know if it is or not. That didn't stick to my ribs. I don't think so.
No, I don't remember this at all. Maybe she was talking to Carolyn or her memory's mixed up. I remember that I told you a bit about the Bible Code in Oak Island.
Mm-hmm.
But this was before Drosnin's book, when Walter, meaning you, thought I was nuts for even suggesting that the Bible was in code.
Mm.
Especially because I am black.
What the fuck has that got to do with anything?
Is she black?
Yeah, she's black.
So that she's saying,
she looks like an Ethiopian. She's tall and thin, and when I first saw her, she's not very dark skinned. Underneath her skin and her arms were these blue, it's not bruises, but they're like a layer of blue something underneath her skin. And I watched it while we had dinner, and they moved. Oh, man, it was freaky. You know, it was like she's occupied, you know.
Right. So she's saying, mm-hmm. So she's saying that she turned you on to the Bible book.
That she predicted the Bible code before the Drosnin wrote the book.
No, but this was before Drosnin's book.
Yeah.
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 When Walter thought I was nuts for even suggesting that the Bible was in code, did you?
No, that's not why I thought she was nuts. I thought she was nuts because she is nuts. I mean, she's, in a sense, she can't function
right.
9 to 5, and that's nuts. You know, and I've been nuts. I've been nuts, and all the great people are nuts, and most of the people I like are nuts, but. But, no, I didn't. It wasn't because she said anything about the Bible code, you know.
And because I'm black, so that's a nutty.
And that's fucking paranoid, you know.
Yeah.
She called me every fucking day and would talk 4 or 5 hours. I couldn't get anything done. I really like her. I really liked what she had to say. She really is visionary, and she is in that state that I've been in, you know, for those 2 years that I was in it. Where I know you're getting the truth, you're channeling real perception, and she was really doing stuff, and she's got.
Where was she living at the time?
She was in Tucson most of the time that I talked to her, but then she went to Cincinnati, you know. Then I talked to her a lot up there. I was.
How many years ago was that happening?
Oh, you know, until I moved to fucking L.A. Then I stopped talking to her. I cut all my.
So that's the late '90s. You were talking to her.
No, 2000. Yeah, 2000 was. I think 2000 was when I went to.
So she, you talked through Y2K with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she says, Peggy did not seem to share those biases. That, I guess she's saying Peggy was into the Bible code.
I don't know what she's talking about. So.
Yeah, and then she says, I was kind of awed at your facile, meaning easy grasp of codes and synchronicities, and the points about Nova Scotia and your command of Finnegan's Wake, which was way over my head at the time.
Yeah.
I still haven't read The Wake, as you call it, and though I have found free e-book versions of the other Joyce books, can't seem to locate a free e-book version of it. Fuck, man, it's only a few bucks. Go buy it.
You can get it used for nothing, practically.
What?
You can get a used copy for a couple bucks.
Yeah, I mean, waiting to get an e-book version.
Yeah,
what
the fuck is that? Yeah.
Do you know where I can find one?
Oh, shit. How long ago?
I'd love to hear, and she says, I'd love to hear in plain terms what you take to be the overall point, you know, in Finnegan's Wake, where it directed you and what you have come to understand on that trek.
Mm-hmm.
One that sounded to me to be life-defining for you. Thanks, Gail Whitaker. And this is, alas, alas for Hamelin, Hamelin. Who's that? She's quoting from Finnegan's Wake, maybe. Alas, alas for Hamelin, there came into many a burgher's pate a text which says that Heaven's Gate opes to the rich at as easy rate as a needle's eye takes a camel in. Oh, that's Browning. She's quoting Robert Browning. Mm-hmm. So,
have you got her?
So she's in that.
You got her email? Yeah, she's in that.
Oh, yeah, her email. You ready?
Yeah.
Galileet, G-A-L-I-L.
Uh-huh.
G-A-L-I-L, Wheat, W-H-E-A-T.
Okay.
Galileet Wheat. At AOL.com.
Mm-hmm.
So the final thing that I want to bring up is, what's White's phone number?
Oh, well, White's, okay.
I need to phone him and chew him out. I never heard back.
Okay, Sophia told me to tell you that she's really enjoying your emails.
Right, but what about White?
Okay.
Does he live with them?
No, he moved out. He's got another, I'll give you his number, 415-310.
Have you mentioned to him that I expected a response? I mean, I sent him the stuff. I don't even know if
he
got it.
Yeah, I did. I did mention it at the time.
And what did he say?
He said, oh, yeah, or something. And
it doesn't sound like he takes you too seriously.
He doesn't take
me. He's off in his own universe.
No, that's right. He's 21. He's just making the break.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's just making the 21. Yeah, that's right. He's born in
84. It's February
84.
He just turned. We celebrate his 21st birthday.
Right.
He's a good man. He's a good person. He's a really good
But he's probably like these kids. They have no fucking continuity.
No.
They're too harassed and frazzled and run around and don't fucking return a call or an email, right?
Well, yeah. He's if you call him on, he's 7199. Did you get that?
Okay, no. 415?
310.
310?
415 is the area code. 310 is the...
Right.
Whatever it is, the resident local thing. 7199.
7199?
Yeah.
310-719-9999.
Yeah, and if you call, want to talk to him, you call him on that number, and he'll answer.
So I'll ask him, what's he doing?
Yeah, I say, what the fuck, why aren't you responding? You know, choose.
Yeah, I sent. I never send that to anybody, and I don't want him sending it around to people.
I don't know. Ask him. Ask him.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you reading it? If you're not reading it, I'll take you off the list. I don't want you to send it around. Just lay it all down to him. You know, he's a perfectly rational guy.
Right. No, the email. Okay. I'm talking about the Fatty Communion text.
Yeah, remind him. Oh, the text. Okay, well.
I sent him the whole text. The whole.
I don't even know if he got it. That'd be first question you ought to ask him. If
he got did
it.
He get it?
Yeah.
And he might say, no, I didn't. So, yeah because I didn't.
Because I don't remember him saying, I got that Fatty Communion thing.
But I emailed him after today, acknowledged that you got it.
Did he?
So he's not getting his emails don't bounce back, but maybe he's not responding to his emails.
Well, where did you send it?
To the emails you gave me.
Milkman@comcast.net. And it used,
right,
to, it used to be Hotmail.
Here, let me just check.
It used to be Hotmail, and it's not. I've sent a whole load of shit that he never got. So it's a milkmanwb@comcast.
Milkman@comcast?
Milkmanwb.
All right.
@comcast.net.
Yes, milkmanwb@hotmail.com?
No, @comcast.net.
Oh, okay. Let's see. No, so that's, I sent Fatty Communion to hotmail.com.
He didn't get it because he's not at hotmail.com. And I just found this out recently.
Oh, okay. So, but all my emails go to, let's see, I'll just see if I... Because I thought I changed it.
Yeah.
Because you told me to change it.
Yeah. Yeah, but send a test and see if it bounces or not, because you might have to drop the WB. He's changed his fucking email around 3 or 4 times, so I'm a little bit confused about it. But I just sent him one that bounced, and I sent it to Hotmail, and it came back. So I know.
Oh, okay. Well, if I look at my bulk mail...
Yeah.
See where it...
Yeah.
Ah, Jesus, not that one.
Yeah.
Let me just move on to second. Find this.
Yeah.
Then we say, okay, I got a question, and we put it on our refrigerator.
Right.
Then McClone then would spy on you, find out the question, then post an answer through Glow, or Glow would tell it what they mimed,
uh-huh.
And then you would then post the question to see if it matched up with their answer.
Oh, great.
So there's a whole series of that. This amazing amazing stuff they did.
Great.
So that's something you want to read.
What I'm interested in is what McLuhan thought about UFOs right now.
That's actually just happening on the... Let me read it to you.
Oh.
Andrew Crystal, the scholar from New Zealand,
yeah.
who went through the archives last spring,
uh-huh.
And wrote down a lot of stuff, just posted McLuhan's on that. Let me just like get it for you.
Great.
I was aware of McLuhan talking about this, but I never saw these notes. I mean,
yeah.
Andrew found unpublished stuff
right
in the archives. So this is under the topic of anti-gravity.
Uh-huh.
And he says, from a typescript written in December 1973, Andrew summarizes it. McLuhan notes he expects the figure of anti-gravity energy to emerge from the ground of anti-gravity effects. And anti-gravity effects are due to TV and computers, because we're already traveling disembodied through electronic discarnate state. So that's the ground of the actual hardware anti-gravity showing up.
Right.
And then it says, that might provide us with more energy than we could manage. Now, Andrew's posting this because he knows I talk about cold fusion, so he's saying McLuhan was intuiting it, or talking about that anti-gravity energy might provide us with more energy than we could imagine, than we could manage. Then he says... giant, the movie Jaws, a giant great white shark arrives on the shores of a New England beach and announces itself as the TV equivalent of King Kong. I don't know. First of all, he says about King Kong, the gorilla announces the overheated medium. King Kong mounts the radio broadcast antennae of the Empire State Building. The first TV station would open in Chicago 7 years later. Then Jaws updates this. A giant great white shark arrives on the shores of New England Beach and announces itself as the TV equivalent of King Kong. Jaws also notes the mechanical crushing. Jaws, the movie, notes the mechanical crushing grip of King Kong had been replaced by eating slash cannibalism. A careful observer might be able to comment on how the cover poster art for Jaws resonates with Gustav Dore's illustrations of Babel. 4 years later, radio was first sent via satellite, because that would be 79. So,